Imperial Leader, the life story of the foremost man of our time, Winston Churchill.
It is 1914, and Europe has plunged into war. Winston Churchill, First Lord of the Admiralty, undertakes the tremendous task of keeping the seas open to Britain, of clearing the seas of enemy vessels. The Prime Minister, Mr. Asquith, consults him on a matter of personalities.
Churchill, is it true that you and Lord Kitchener are on bad terms?
Quite untrue, Mr. Asquith.
Indeed. Then my informant was wrong.
My relations with Lord Kitchener have been very limited. I will admit that he disapproved of me severely in my youth, and endeavored to prevent me from coming to the Sudan campaign.
But you went, despite his disapproval?
Yes, I was appointed by the War Office.
And you met Kitchener out there?
Once. It was on the field of Omdurman, when, as a subaltern in the 21st Lancers, I was sent back to report verbally to the Commander-in-Chief the position of the advancing Dervish army.
What happened then?
Nothing. I delivered my message, he asked a few questions and dismissed me. Was no time for recrimination.
But you must have heard later what Kitchener thought of your being appointed in the face of his disapproval.
Yes, I understand he was most indignant. There was no official reprimand. Later, I wrote an account of the Sudan campaign and had occasion to criticize Kitchener several times. It was in a spirit of the utmost impartiality. But I heard that he was extremely angry about it.
And you haven't met since?
Oh, yes, yes. In 1910, I met him at the army maneuvers. 2 years ago, we both attended the Malta Conference. Only a few weeks ago, we sat next to each other at a luncheon.
That's a great relief.
Why?
Because I've asked Lord Kitchener to undertake ministerial charge of the War Office.
I see.
Do you approve?
Certainly. His record makes him by far the best man for such a post. And I understand he's much easier to get along with these days.
I hope so, because you and he will see a good deal of each other from now on. It would be most unfortunate if anything...
You need have no anxiety on that score, Mr. Asquith. As regards Kitchener's opinion of me, it was a case of dislike before first sight. As regards my opinion of Lord Kitchener, I believe him to be a very fine soldier and a man with the courage of his convictions. It may even turn out that we shall become bosom friends. Formal business is over, Lord Kitchener. I want to say how glad I am that you've been appointed Secretary of State for War. I can imagine no better choice for the position.
Thanks, Churchill. I heard you doing a pretty good job at the Admiralty. We shall have to get together over a few details.
As soon as you like.
Not for a few days. I haven't had time to settle down yet. What did you think of the cabinet meeting?
I was interested to hear that you think the war will be a long one. I'm afraid most people would disagree with you.
Most people don't know what they're talking about. It may be a short war, but it's my experience that wars take unexpected courses. We shall have to prepare for a long struggle.
You don't think our sea power will tend to make a speedy end of it?
A big struggle like this can't be ended on the sea, or won by sea power alone. It can only be ended by great battles on the continent. And the British Empire must bear its part on a scale proportionate to its magnitude and power.
Well, we were never a great military power, at least not in the sense that we are a great naval power.
We must be prepared to put armies of millions in the field and maintain them there for several years. In no other way can we discharge our duty to our allies or to the world.
We shall have to bring in conscription.
No, not for the present. For the present, I shall rely on volunteers. I intend to form 6 new regular divisions.
New divisions? Well, why not form the new volunteers on the already working model of the Territorial Army?
Territorials are of no use. I was present at the Battle on the Loire in 1870, and the French Territorials threw away the victory. No. Give me regulars, Churchill.
Oh, there's a great difference between French and British Territorials, Lord Kitchener. On the one hand...
Territorials are no good to me, and that's an end of it. Where can I find you if I want you urgently, Churchill?
At the Admiralty, night or day. I work there, I eat there, I sleep there. Come and see me any time you like. I'm always at home. Come in. Lord Kitchener, come in and sit down. I'm having breakfast in bed this morning and going through my boxes at the same time. Can I get you some coffee?
Coffee? Oh, no. No, thanks.
Well, what's that you have there? Telegram?
Bad news.
I see. Thanks.
It's from French.
My troops have been engaged all day with the enemy on a line roughly east and west through Mons. The attack was renewed after dark. We held our ground tenaciously. Well, that's all right so far.
Read the rest.
I've just received a message from the GOC 5th Army that his troops have been driven back, that Namur has fallen, and that he has taken up a line from Auberge to Rocroi. Good God! Namur fallen, taken in a single day?
He's strong. We had fought almost an impregnable fortress. But read what follows.
I have therefore ordered a retirement to the line Valenciennes, Longueville, Auberge, which is being carried out now. It will prove a difficult operation if the enemy remains in contact. I remember your precise instructions as to method and direction of retirement if necessity arises. I think that immediate attention should be directed to the defense of Havre.
That's why I've come to you, Churchill. French says we should fortify Havre. That means that the channel ports are in danger.
It seems that we shall have to revise many of our previous judgments, including our belief in the superiority of the French army.
I had hoped for an advance, a counterstroke. Instead, I get this.
I'll see my admirals at 10. If the channel ports are in danger, we shall have to do something.
If only the Russians would do something. That would be our salvation. Oh, I don't know. I can't think. Perhaps I should have some coffee, Churchill.
Yes, we'll both have a cup, extra strong. And then we'll get together and decide just what to do. Now, you mustn't worry too much. Everything's going to turn out all right.
You're very kind, Churchill. Very kind indeed. You made me feel much better.
Faced with disaster on land, the incomparable British Navy goes into action. Plans for a diversion, a minor action in Heligoland Bight, which will show the Germans that the British Navy has bared its teeth and rolled up its sleeves. Winston Churchill, not yet 40, has won a great personal triumph by bringing a fleet into action. He is one of the handful of men to whom is entrusted the supreme direction of the greatest imperial effort in history. Churchill, Roger Keyes, Jellicoe, Beatty, great names which foreshadow great deeds. At the Admiralty...
Sit down, Commodore Tyrwhitt. You too, Commodore Keyes. I understand you have some proposal to make to me.
Yes, sir. You've often said we should develop a minor offensive against the Germans in Heligoland Bight.
So that's what I'd like, Tyrwhitt, but I don't know if it's practicable at this juncture.
Keyes has a plan, sir. Perhaps you'd rely on him to explain it to you.
By all means, go on, Keyes.
Well, sir, as you know, since the first hours of the war, our submarines have been prowling about in the Heligoland Bight. They've now accumulated some accurate information about the dispositions of the enemy. He's got a flotilla of destroyers attended by a couple of small cruisers, patrolling of a night to the north of Heligoland. And these are relieved just before dawn by another flotilla.
Well, what do you propose to do?
I thought if we took two flotillas of our best destroyers and a couple of light cruisers from Harwich by night, we could be somewhere near the island of Sylt by dawn.
Then we could make a left-handed swoop inshore, destroy the outcoming flotilla, and follow up by an attempt to cut off the incoming flotilla.
Mm-hmm. Sounds all right. What do you think, Prince Louis?
Suppose the German heavy ships come out. What then?
I've thought of that. We'd need 6 submarines in 2 divisions to attack any heavy ships that come out. And the 2 battle cruisers now stationed at the Humber could act as support if necessary.
It's a good plan. I congratulate you both.
And so do I. I'll inform Sir John Jellicoe immediately what we propose to do. He may be able to spare a few more ships to stand by in case of accident.
Shall we go ahead with the plan, sir?
By all means. I'd like to begin operations as soon as possible. What do you say to the 28th?
I think so.
Hey, Keyes?
All right with me.
Very well, then. At dawn on the 28th, and good luck to both of you.
Sir John Jellicoe has offered to send 3 battle cruisers and 6 light cruisers in further support of Tyrwhitt and Keyes.
Splendid. Did he say who was to be in command?
Yes.
Beatty.
Beatty? My former naval secretary. I'm delighted, Prince Louis, beyond measure. With Beatty in charge, we can expect great things. Send a message to Sir John right away. We shall be glad of the ships, and even more glad of the men.
Any news yet, Churchill?
Reports are slowly trickling in, Mr. Prime Minister. Beatty's squadron has been in action, and two enemy cruisers are smashed to pieces.
That's wonderful.
In addition, light cruisers and destroyers led by Tirrett have sunk a third ship.
But this is great news. I thought you'd be the happiest man in England, Churchill.
I'm far from that, Mr. Prime Minister.
There's something you haven't told me? Some bad news?
Not in the sense you mean, but our staff work has been shocking. I'm disgusted.
Why?
I just learned that Keyes and Tirrett were not informed of the presence of Admiral Beatty and his additional battle cruisers and light cruisers.
That's bad. Very bad.
But not the worst. Beatty was not informed of the area in which our submarines were working.
That's a miracle half our ships haven't been sunk.
Exactly. I believe things have gone very well, but more by the mercy of God than through any merit of ours. Well, well, perhaps we shall know better next time.
Disappointments, successes, life for Winston Churchill in the early days of the Great War is an adventure, but one lived in grim earnest. Possessed of great vision, he is the ideal leader of the mighty British Navy. His star is in the ascendant, but bitter misfortune is soon to attend his fate. He is too eager to win the war to be cautious of his own reputation. He is hated by the pacifists, suspected by many of his liberal colleagues, envied by lesser men. But his one thought is win the war, and thus he invites inevitable disappointment. For a day he may fall, only to rise again as a great leader, an imperial leader.